But the one question I think people have from the outside, particularly sitting here in Abbottstown today, you look around here, there's no way it's more than a two-minute walk from your office to Stephen McGuinness's office. Yet, you haven't met with the PFAI for well over a year at this stage. Why not?
There's a structure in the FAI which Frank Abbott, who deals with competitions, there's different departments in the organisation that deal directly, be it legal issues, financial issues, competitions issues. Frank Gavin deals with the PFAI in all matters. And when you interview him later, he'll give you an insight into the day-to-day workings that have been going on over the last period of time.
But you're the head of the association, John, and we've had an issue within the past month of players going up to 2 months without being paid in your league. Is that not a stage where you have to sit down, where your leadership is needed to step in with the PFAI?
Which we did with the clubs. So we sat with Limerick and we sat with Bray, and all the players are now up to date. Just like I sat with Joan Martin about the redevelopment of the stadium in Drogheda, like I sat with Tim Lucy down in Cork about the Glanmire project, and we sit with DCC about Dalymount Park. They're the big strategy things that come across my desk, and there's not a day that I don't deal with a League of Ireland matter, but the structure of the organisation on operational matters, that's Frank Gavin's job to do, and that's what he does, and he'll outline that to you when he sees you later.
But from a purely player's point of view, they have chosen the PFAI to represent them. Are you willing to talk to the PFAI?
And we have a structure where Frank Gavin, who's our director of competitions, deals directly with the PFAI, and that's the structure.
But are there not certain issues when players are going 2 months without being paid, having to pay for their own operations, that's a time where you as the CEO have to step in?
That's when we stepped in and we dealt with Bray and Limerick directly, and as of today, there is no players' wages outstanding. That's the most important point to make. And if you look at last year, the salaries were nearly €6 million, the players all paid. Licensing in general has been very good for the League of Ireland. Nothing, like I said earlier, VAR has had its issues in football. Mm. Licensing is not something that you say it's going to be 100% perfect, but it's done well for the league.
Would you accept then there's a communication issue?
And if you look at the industry over the last 3 years, the league clubs have generated €50 million. Mm. Okay, so it's an industry that we want to grow. But there's a structure in the organisation to deal with all these things. And when you speak to Fran, he'll outline to you in detail how that's going on operational level. My role is to deal in strategy. Like Drogheda United, like Dalymount Park, like Glanmire, and the biggest issue, you know, for the league going forward from the FAI's perspective is the structure that will run the league going forward. And we've been sitting with the clubs for a period of time, and we want an answer to that by December of this year, so we can set out the strategy for the league going forward. This is the hybrid system that's been much mentioned. Mm. That both the clubs and the FAI run the league together.
So handing some of the power back.
Yeah, absolutely, and doing it in partnership together. And that's something that we would like the clubs to kind of come to a position with us by the end of December. That's the biggest issue for me at the moment.
It does feel as though issues like this, and they do crop up year on year, are undermining any of the good things that are happening. And I'm sure you'll talk about Dundalk tonight in the Europa League in Cork City. Yeah. And some of the success stories of the league. But these stories, they're what end up on Liveline, the players not being paid, that all the good things that are happening are undermined by this. So is it a communication problem that you're not getting the message across that you're dealing with the issues of Bray and Limerick? And why aren't the PFAI involved in those negotiations when you're talking with Bray as well?
I think
why hasn't that been fed back to the players through the PFAI?
See, we deal with the clubs directly, and Fran deals with the PFAI. That's the way it cuts, and that's the way it works. So, I mean, like you've just mentioned the good stories about Cork and Dundalk and Drogheda and all those, there's always going to be issues in professional football. And that's not just in Ireland, that's across Europe. All I can say is that the league is in better shape over the last number of years than it was when we initially took it over.
The massive thing in Crusaders is connecting and caring. So that's the detail comes after that. So you have to connect with every single player. But it's really easy to connect, I think, if the guy has a good attitude. And that's what they're big on down there, attitude.
What do you mean by caring?
Caring, so we have an environment where we really care. So, for example, and got out to see a few other environments, and for anyone, I think, to see what world class is, they should go to meet Aidan O'Brien, the horse trainer, because that's a guy who cares. That's a guy who's world class. That's a guy who has it down to the nth degree and what performance is about. So, that's a big thing for him, is caring. So, essentially, and it's a strength of what's been passed on from the likes of Woody to Munster teams, our massive difference is we cared. Because if you care, you get up half a second, a quarter of a second faster than the opposition. But it doesn't tell 20 times. It'll tell maybe on the 78th minute of a game if you do it consistently multiplied by 15. So the environment that cares, genuinely cares, you can say you care, but do you really care? So how do you measure that? Some things you can't measure. Some things there's no stats for.
What motivated you most during your career?
Even now, the challenge is something new. Every year is new.
There's a reason I ask, because I was wondering, was it at times, I don't want to say a personal grudge, but one of the most interesting stories is of the day of the 2017 All-Ireland final. So I'm sure a lot of people listening will remember the comments that Mick Bohan made, the Dublin manager, the week beforehand against you personally, about intimidating referees, knowing how to get frees, cynical, all of that. You're on the bus to the All-Ireland final. I'm sure most of your teammates are listening to music, getting themselves in the mood. You're listening to a recording of Mick Bohan's comments. That seems pretty remarkable. Is that, I don't know, would a psychologist not tell you that's an incredibly negative mindset to be going into an All-Ireland final with?
Possibly. I don't probably talk to too many sports psychologists. I suppose we all motivate ourselves in different ways for different matches, or get up in different ways for matches. Obviously what Mick's comments are at the time are very disappointing. But as a manager, if I was in Mick's shoes, it was played very, very well. Do you know, I wouldn't personally have anything against Mick.
He obviously said they were taken out of context.
After the context was taken. After the time. And that's fine. You know, looking back at him, fair play to me, is dead right. And, you know, he's done brilliant with that Dublin team and done brilliant with them this year. But, yeah, I suppose everyone is motivated differently. You know, when we were on the bus, we'd have girls that would be, some of them would be chatting away, or some of them would be eating food, or some of them would be sitting. I'd be the one sitting in a corner on my own, motivating myself to try and be the best I can be on any given day. So that's just me. I just thought that's what I needed, that little bit of extra something to motivate me on the day. Was it right or wrong? Who knows? Obviously, probably wasn't the best thing if we don't win the All-Ireland, but if you win it, it is. But different things motivate you, I suppose.
The book goes right up to this season and the falling out with Peter Leahy, the decision of yourself and 11 more players to walk away from the panel. The book finishes, is it where both sides have agreed to say nothing? It's sort of before all the back and forth in media started. Where does it stand right now? Have you had any contact with Peter Leahy or the Mayo County Board over the last few weeks?
I have absolutely no comment or no phone call or anything from Peter. I haven't talked to Peter since he left the team. With the county board, we've had interaction with them because of the whole appeal system with the club and stuff like that. So you've had to have interacted with them at meetings, but nothing from a level of anything else. Where it stands at the moment, I won't be putting on the Mayo jersey personally myself again. This year would have been my last year. It's disappointing that the way it ended, I suppose. The biggest disappointing thing for me is that there's 11 girls, probably at least 7 or 8 of them that are in their prime or haven't even reached their prime, that won't play with Mayo in the near future, which is really disappointing for Mayo itself because, you know, these are some of the best footballers that the county's ever produced and some of the best underage talent coming through. And some of them are as young as 19 and 20 and have their whole careers ahead. And, you know, some of them are club mates of mine, some of them are best friends of mine, and, you know, that's the disappointing thing, that going forward for them and for Mayo football, it's not good because Mayo football need them and they need Mayo football.
Yeah, it was obviously an incredibly difficult time for everybody involved on both sides and got pretty unsavoury and just very messy with the different interactions and probably no actual interaction between both sides. The one line I think that still lingers is the line about it being not being a safe environment, not being a healthy environment. Yeah. Do you have any regrets about that language? Did you go a step too far with that?
No, I don't think I went a step too far. I suppose the most disappointing thing for me is when all the saga developed and blew up and was trawled through the media for months, was that never needed to happen. If there was a strong enough body, whether it was Mayo County Board or the LGFA, that stepped in straight away and dealt with the issues. And that's the really disappointing thing. These issues have never been dealt with. Yeah. We're 4 months
on. Did you understand the full weight of your words when you talk about an unsafe environment? Because it's almost too ambiguous in that it leaves it open to people's imagination and people automatically assume the worst of what happened.
I understand that. I suppose the most important thing when you use words that can be taken in many different contexts, that's the thing. To me, from a point of view, when I use the words, Well, that's the reason I stepped away. Yeah, obviously we can have perceptions of what unsafe and what unhealthy are. But
well, what's your perception of?
Well, from why, and I suppose the girls have come out in media and said it, and, you know, again, majority of the girls have never been contacted by anyone from the media, bar myself, or from anyone in LGFA. When we talked about unsafe and unhealthy, we were always on about their mental well-being. And there's girls' mental well-being that really suffered and still is suffering because of the environment that they're in.
Whereas some people maybe look at teaching as a good profession for GEA players, you just went a slightly different route.
Slightly different, yeah. No. So certainly with the Army, there was a lot more leeway, so it was. And you were able to... They gave time towards sports. They emphasised a lot of the Army on sports, which was obviously suited me.
And did you enjoy it? Or was it very much a means to an end?
A means to an end, to be honest. I enjoyed it only because doing so well with Kilkenny.
Right.
You know, there wasn't much, there's no job satisfaction in it for me. I'm sure for certain lads they do, but in the Army itself, there's nothing to do. Like, you know, it's obviously a good thing there's nothing to do, as in Army wise. But,
yeah.
But other than that, you know, you walk down to the locker rooms and that, and you see lads sitting around doing nothing, like, because there's just nothing to do. And from things like this, like people coming out and saying there's nothing to do, and then the high lads are wondering what's going on, how come lads are doing nothing, and then they kind of enforce things to happen, but there's literally nothing to do, you know. They'll do classes, they'll do as much as they can, but
yeah.
You know, when you consider...
I'd imagine that comes as a surprise to a lot of people. Yeah. Obviously, we know that here, thankfully, as you say, you're not in the middle of war.
Exactly, yeah.
But at the same time, that, like, there's such investment put into...
There is, and you know, certainly when I hear the nurses coming out looking for more pay, like, I can see exactly why, like, the work they do, you know, towards what the Army probably do, you know, but the problem is, the higher up is the problem, like, they're happy up there, like, they're not going to say, oh, there's nothing being done, or we're getting overpaid, where the people at the bottom are the people that are struggling.
I was going to say, it doesn't sound like morale can be great in that situation, but then actually, all we hear is that morale isn't great.
No, it's not. No, it's not. Like, you see it on social media, and the lads aren't allowed to speak out about it, so they aren't, and that's probably one of the biggest problems.
What are the sort of issues? Is it just boredom?
Just boredom. Absolute boredom. And, you know, and again, from this, the top lads will probably come down and say, oh, we need to do this, we need to do that, and there's actually nothing to do. Like, you know, it's a whole revamp that needs to be done.
And what would you like to be doing? What would you? Like, it's a conversation that probably doesn't happen very often, and you're out of it now, you can be perfectly honest.
More options, like, you know, they could easily, they do trades in there, in the Army, like, you know, and you'd like to see a lot more lads push towards doing the trades and maybe helping out in different ways, like, you know.
Comes now to Henderson inside the area, brings it to the end line, takes it to the back post, and Liverpool have got in front, and Sadio Mane scores in front of the cop, and Anfield has got absolutely wild. Jordan Henderson's dink cross to the back post, headed in by Sadio Mane, and Liverpool, they will not go away. They lead Chelsea by a goal to nil. Sadio Mane.
Well, again, there's options between the middle of the goals when a cross comes in. It's great play from Jordan Henderson. Jordan Henderson have been very impressed in the whole of this game with his movement, largely off the ball. He's not really had too much influence on it, but that time, checking onto his left, then back onto his right, and it's a perfect ball, stood up to the far post. Mane gets himself away from Azpilicueta. Say, it's just great feet initially, just dinks it up. That's exactly what you want to do when you get to the byline, standing up to the far post, and it's a free header for Mane, 4 yards out, open goal, absolutely no doubt that ball was finding the net. Nothing more than Liverpool have deserved. They've been the most threatening throughout.
Well, it was the pressure from Mo Salah on Emerson as he looked to clear, then knocked the ball into the path of Jordan Henderson, lifted his head on the byline and spotted Sadio Mane with the freedom of Anfield at the back post, and he headed calmly into the back of the net for his 18th goal of the season in the Premier League, and that is the most crucial one so far because it finally breaks the deadlock. And you'd have to say, the way Liverpool started this second half, they have deserved it as well.
Yeah, they started the first half in the same manner as well, but weren't able to find the net with the chances that they had maybe early on, certainly the Mo Salah chance he had early on, and they started the second half exactly the same way, and that must have been the message from Jurgen Klopp coming out here today. Started with a good tempo, start to get at them, and they've created so many problems for Chelsea.
And here they come again, but it's a heavy touch from Salah as he cuts in from the right. Louise comes across, and then
just passes the ball straight out of play, and maybe Chelsea are a bit rattled after the concession of that goal. Well, Jordan Henderson's been key to everything Liverpool have done well today.
When he's
been involved, they've looked far more dangerous, pushing forward from that position from the right of the three. When he's drifted out of the game, it's when Liverpool have struggled to get any sort of a tempo. And it was his cross for Sadio Mane's goal. Mane and all the Liverpool players ran to the left to celebrate in front of the cop. Jordan Henderson came off celebrating on this near side. He knows what it means. Salah takes the shot. Salah with one of the goals of the season, 25 yards out, smashes a shot into the top corner of the net, and Liverpool are going back on top of the Premier League, and Mo Salah is back to his very, very best. It's Liverpool 2, Chelsea 0, Mo Salah, pick it out.
What a goal, unbelievable.
I'm sure from what you were saying about the questions journalists are asking, that you're aware of the story in last weekend's Sunday Independent of the director of corporate enforcement.
Yeah.
They received this protected disclosure around concerns of governance at the FAI, and it included questions around how funds linked to the John Giles Foundation are operated.
Yeah.
Having had a bit of time to look at that, are you confident that any money belonging to the foundation has been used in the right way?
Well, first of all, I don't know what the accusation is. I think the legal people at the FAI are allowed to find out exactly what it is. I'd like to know myself exactly what it is. But I'd be very confident that the money that came into the trust, the foundation, went out in grants to the teams around the country that apply for them. That's what I know, Nathan. And I would be very disappointed or surprised if there was anything else that didn't occur, as I've said.
Look, I'm sure it's not a nice thing to pick up the paper on a Sunday morning and see your name suddenly in the middle of all this controversy and all this scandal. Like, are you annoyed with what's gone on at the FAI that you found yourself dragged into this?
Well, I think it's the way it goes in this particular situation. You know, once we're in the situation, and then people in newspaper guys, they're only doing their job, are looking out to see. I don't think, to be honest, I don't think the newspaper guys are after me. They're after what they could get out from it, probably against John Delaney. And I feel a little bit sad that I'm in a position that I have to justify myself, you know.
Are you worried about it?
No, I'm not worried about it, Nathan. No, because I know I haven't done anything wrong. I know that I haven't taken any money from the foundation. I believe in the foundation. I will continue to work and hope for years to work in the foundation. I think the foundation, so far, over the 9-10 years, has raised a lot of money.
Yeah.
What I find with schoolboy football, you'd want to be having loads of money to really solve the problem. But you get clubs that you give them enough to get a set of jerseys or a nets, and I found them unbelievably grateful for that. You know, every little helps, and you'd be amazed. I'd like go down to Cundagon, Dublin as well, how a set of jerseys or a footballs or something can actually help. You know, and that's really at the grass. That's really at grassroots football. And the people I find, I go down the country in Dublin, they're absolutely brilliant. The people who run schoolboy football.
Yeah.
The time they put into it, the parents put into it, the kids go out and play. And the fact that the kids are out playing, obviously, it's keeping them healthy, it's keeping them right. A lot of them, I found for every one player in my time and since, for every one international you produce, there's 1,000 kids who will never be international football. But it's part of their life to actually play football. I don't care whether it's football.
Yeah, well, it's just as important. As
they're out. And I know from my own experience in Ormond Square, if we didn't have football, there's no doubt, I would, definitely, would have got into some sort of mischief or trouble. I've no doubt about that. Whereas I was playing football from morning to night, getting tired, gone to bed, and all my pals were the same. And thank God, all of us grew up okay.
Yeah. You're happy then to continue with the John Giles Foundation, to continue to have your name associated with it?
Definitely, yeah. Definitely. I'd be very disappointed if I wasn't. And I hope, I'm getting on a bit now, Nathan, that it lasts another 9 years.
Yeah, hopefully. And look, the sad thing about all this is that there's obviously, you know, good people working on the foundation. Yeah.